Welcome to Dead White Guys. I'm your host, Jason Rennie. Thanks for tuning into episode 26 of Dead White Guys. This week we're going to continue the reading from Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics. This time the reading's going to concentrate on Aristotle's understanding of virtue and how this relates to happiness. However, the reading I found is kind of long, so I'm going to do it over 2 weeks. Anyway, let's get down to today's reading. Actions, then, are called just and temperate. When they are such, as the just or temperate man would do. But it is not the man who does these that is just and temperate, but the man who also does them as just and temperate men do them. It is well said, then, that it is by doing just acts that the man that is just is produced, and by doing temperate acts the temperate man. Without doing these things, no one would have even a prospect of becoming good. But most people do not do these, but take refuge in theory and think they are being philosophers, and will become good in this way, behaving somewhat like patients who listen attentively to their doctors, but do none of the things that they are ordered to do. As the latter will not be made well in body by such a course of treatment, the former will not be made well in soul by such a course of philosophy. Next, we must consider what virtue is. Since things that are found in the soul are of three kinds, passions, faculties, states of character, virtue must be one of these. By passions I mean appetite, anger, fear, cowardice, envy, joy, friendly feelings, hatred, longing, emulation, pity, and in general the feelings that are accompanied by pleasure or pain. By faculties, the things in virtue of which we are said to be capable of feeling these, example, of becoming angry or being pained or feeling pity. By states of character, the things in virtue of which we stand well or badly with reference to the passions, example, with reference to anger, we stand badly if we feel it violently or too weakly, and well if we feel it moderately, and similarly with reference to the other passions. Now neither the virtues nor the vices are passions, because we are not called good or bad on the ground of our passions, but are so-called on the ground of our virtues and our vices. And because we are neither praised nor blamed for our passions, for the man who feels fear or anger is not praised, nor is the man who simply feels anger blamed, but the man who feels it in a certain way. But for our virtues and our vices we are praised or blamed. Again, we feel anger and fear without choice, but the virtues are modes of choice or involve choice. Further, in respect of the passions we are said to be moved, but in the respect of the virtues and the vices, we are said not to be moved, but to be disposed in a particular way. For these reasons also, they are not faculties. For we are neither called good nor bad, nor praised nor blamed, for the simple capacity of feeling the passions. Again, we have the faculties by nature, but we are not made good or bad by nature. We have spoken of this before. If, then, the virtues are neither passions nor faculties, all that remains is that they should be states of character. Thus, we have stated what virtue is in respect of its genus. We must, however, not only describe virtue as a state of character, but also say what sort of state it is. We may remark, then, that every virtue or excellence both brings into good condition the things of which it is the excellence and makes the work of that thing be done well. Example, the excellence of the eye makes both the eye and its work good, for it is by the excellence of the eye that we see well. Similarly, the excellence of the horse makes a horse both good in itself and good at running and at carrying its rider and at awaiting the attack of the enemy. Therefore, if this is true in every case, the virtue of man also will be the state of character which makes a man good and which makes him do his own work well. How this is to happen, we have stated already, but it will be made plain also by the following consideration of the specific nature of virtue. In everything that is continuous and divisible, it is possible to take more, less, or an equal amount, and that either, in terms of the thing itself or relatively to us, and the equal in an intermediate between excess and defect. By the intermediate in the object, I mean that which is equidistant from each of the extremes, which is one and the same for all men. By the intermediate relatively to us, that which is neither too much nor too little, and this is not one nor the same for all. For instance, if 10 is many and 2 is few, 6 is the intermediate, taken in terms of the object, for it exceeds and is exceeded by an equal amount. This is intermediate according to arithmetical proportion. But the intermediate relatively to us is not to be taken so. If 10 pounds are too much for a particular person to eat, and 2 too little, it does not follow that the trainer will order 6 pounds, for this also is perhaps too much for the person who is to take it, or too little for Milo, too much for the beginner in athletic exercises. The same is true of running and wrestling. Thus, a master of any art avoids excess and defect. but seeks the intermediate and chooses this, the intermediate not as the object, but relatively to us. If it is thus, then, that every art does its work well by looking to the intermediate and judging its works by this standard, so that we often say of good works of art that it is not possible either to take away or to add anything, implying that excess and defect destroys the goodness of the works of art, while the mean preserves it, and good artists, as we say, look to this in their work, and if further virtue is more exact and better than any art, as nature also is, then virtue must have the quality of aiming at the intermediate. I mean moral virtue, for it is this that is concerned with passions and actions. And in these there is excess, defect, and the intermediate. For instance, both fear and confidence, and appetite and anger, and pity, and in general pleasure and pain may be felt too much and too little, and in both cases not well. But to feel them at the right times with reference to the right objects, towards the right people, with the right motive, and in the right way, is what is both intermediate and best, and this is the characteristic of virtue. Similarly, with regard to actions, also there is excess, defect, and the intermediate. Now virtue is concerned with passions and actions, in which excess is a form of failure, and so is defect. While the intermediate is praised and is a form of success, and being praised and being successful are both characteristic of virtue. Therefore, virtue is a kind of mean, since, as we have seen, it aims at what is intermediate. Again, it is possible to fail in many ways, for evil belongs to the class of the unlimited, as the Pythagoreans conjectured, and good to that of the limited. While to succeed is possible only in one way, for which reason also one is easy and the other difficult, to miss the mark is easy, to hit it difficult. For these reasons also, then, excess and defect are characteristic of vice and the mean of virtue. For men are good in but one way, but bad in many. Virtue, then, is a state of character concerned with choice lying in a mean, i.e., the means relative to us, this being determined by a rational principle, and by that principle by which the man of practical wisdom would determine it. Now, it is a mean between two vices, that which depends on excess and that which depends on defect, and again, it is a mean because the vices respectively fall short of or exceed what is right in both passions and actions, while virtue both finds and chooses that which is intermediate. Hence, in respect of its substance and the definition which states its essence, virtue is a mean, with regard to what is best and right and extreme. But not every action nor every passion admits of a mean, for some have names that already imply badness, example, spite, shamelessness, envy, and in the case of actions, adultery, theft, murder. For all of these and such like things imply by their names that they are themselves bad, and not the excesses or deficiencies of them. It is not possible, then, ever, to be right with regard to them. One must always be wrong. Nor does goodness or badness with regards to such things depend on committing adultery with the right woman at the right time and in the right way. But simply to do any of them is to go wrong. It would be equally absurd, then, to expect that in an unjust, cowardly, and voluptuous action there should be a mean, an excess and a deficiency. For at that rate there would be a mean of excess and a deficiency, an excess of excess and a deficiency of deficiency. But as there is no excess and deficiency of temperance and courage, because what is intermediate is in a sense an extreme, so too of the actions we have mentioned, there is no mean nor an excess and deficiency. But however, they are done wrong. For in general, there is neither a mean of excess and deficiency, nor excess and deficiency of a mean. Well, that brings us to the end of today's reading. Thanks for tuning in again. As usual, if you have any feedback, you can send me an email, deadwhiteguys@gmail.com. Or leave a comment on the blog, deadwhiteguys.blogspot.com. And this is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and it's copyright Jason Rennie 2005. Thanks for listening. Till next time.